It took nearly a century for a young nation to understand that the contradiction of legalized slavery in a Declaration of Independence and a Constitution claiming freedom for all people threatened the United States of America. When the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by Abraham Lincoln in January of 1863, it took 2.5 years for the news of freedom to make it to the last slaves who would finally learn that the world had changed. On this day in 1865, Major General Gordon Granger and his Union soldiers landed at Galveston, Texas, with their news. Juneteenth, the day has been called ever since. The moment African Americans and their former oppressors and emancipators asked the question, what now? It's a question we are still asking. Mary Frances Berry is the former chairwoman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and author of My Face is Black is True, Callie House and the Struggle for Ex-Slave Reparations. Berry says that in the late 1800s, the idea of reparations for the ravages of slavery was a relatively simple answer to the question of what now. It's much more complicated in 2014, but still, she says, worth asking.
First of all, you have lots of African Americans who don't believe reparations are necessary because of the change that has occurred in the country, and that it is particularly ironic to be talking about it when Obama's president. But when people do talk about it, the question is, who would get any reparations that were allocated? How would they be allocated? Who would decide? And how would this all happen? And I have a simple answer to that. I think that everyone should agree, black and white, anybody in the country, that the people who were slaves and who, in fact, after emancipation, petitioned the government to ask the government for reparations for their work, like those that I wrote about in a book called My Face is Black is True, published by Knopf. These were people whose petitions are in the National Archives in Washington, who in the late 19th century, when they were old and sick and there was no Social Security in those days, asked that they be given something to reward them for the work that they'd been done. And the details of their experience, where they were, whose plantation, how long they were there, who owned them, and all the rest, are in these petitions. People who couldn't write had other people write it down for them. And they organized to try to do that. They failed, but those records are there. So I think that at the very least, if we were ever to have any reparations, we might look to the descendants of that small group and not debate that. The further debate would be about what to do about everybody else. And some people, including a historian, V.P. Franklin, have suggested a superfund, like the one we use for toxic waste, a reparations superfund, in which those who took advantage of the slaves and took advantage of black people since, businesses, railroads, universities, all of whom have a history with slavery and with exploitation, would pay into this fund, and that it would be organized and have people from organizations like the NAACP and others who have endorsed the idea of reparations in the past serve on the board, and they would figure out in distinct communities what would help those communities. So there can be debates about how to do it. The first question is, will it ever be done? I think it highly improbable, though I support it. But I do think we should begin with having some kind of commission, much like the Reconciliation Commission in South Africa and in other places, to look at the issue.
Do you think that reparations, in some sense, is a more logical approach to issues that we have a great deal of constitutional difficulty with, like affirmative action, where you attempt to recompense a group, a protected minority in this case, From events that produce circumstances that cause them to be disadvantaged in our time? Reparations is a more logical approach than trying to sort of rig the game and play with the rules of the game to create affirmative action models and quotas that have already been eroded by the Supreme Court.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call it rigging, which... I find the use of the term rigging something that shouldn't be used when we're talking about remedies for race discrimination. It's a question of trying to find a remedy. But in any case, leaving that aside, I think that affirmative action has been done to death in part because the country does not want to discuss or acknowledge its history of slavery and Jim Crow and how there are lingering effects. And while many groups are discriminated against, slavery and the African-American experience, as Madison and Jefferson said long ago, is part of America's original sin, which has not been washed away in all this time. But it has been eroded. Those same concerns that have eroded affirmative action erode the idea of reparations, because reparations depends on acknowledging the history of slavery and the history of Jim Crow and the presence of racial discrimination. Until America is again, as it did in the 60s, willing to face slavery, its consequences, Jim Crow, and that there are lingering effects, we won't get affirmative action, for goodness sake, and we certainly won't get reparations.
Isn't reparations a more direct and honest acknowledgement of the legacy of Jim Crow, the legacy of slavery, and the difficulty that that has caused for the nation?
Would have been more honest in 1900, when those people who asked for it and who petitioned the Congress and said, please do something for us, and who were still alive and had been slaves, asked for it. The honest thing to do would have been to give to them, and something should be given in their memory. That was totally unfair to have people who ask for reparations for the work they did. We gave reparations to Japanese Americans for the internment. We give reparations for the Holocaust, all of which we should do, and it's right to do. But when we think about our history and realize that we were unwilling to give 1 cent to those poor old people who had been slaves, worked all their lives, and passed it on to their children, nothing, you would think that that would have been fair. What would be fair today is to do something. And I think that remedies for race discrimination are in decline, not just in the court, but everywhere in the country. And the Obama presidency, with a black man as president, sort of masks the erosion that is taking place in the country. But it has given the country an argument to say that we're post-racial and there's no need for remedies for race discrimination, and that would include reparations and affirmative action.
So I gather that history makes those sweet drinks on Juneteenth taste a little less sweet this year.
Well, it's sweet to be emancipated. We certainly wouldn't want to be slaves again, but we would hope that something else would be done.
Mary Frances Berry, former chairwoman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, author of My Face is Black is True, Callie House and the Struggle for Ex-Slave Reparations. You spoke with us from Kansas City. Thanks so much, Mary.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.